RK101, I think. Start with the love question. Mali Hari Kunda's post there on social media, which I appreciate very much. So here are some points. Yes. When I was a young guy, I was hurt in love affairs, and thus, yes, became more cynical. But this is one of the things that led me to Krishna consciousness, that here, yes, there is love. And this is where it is, bhakti. It's love of God, of course. And all this other lack of love between us doesn't matter anymore. It was just illusory anyway. But then I saw, as the years went by, in that group of aspiring bhaktas, devotees of God, lovers of God, that well, sometimes Prabhupada said it outright, but yes, some people make a show of love of God. They come in the temple, fall on the floor, roll around in the ecstasy of love. But then we learn that love is not that sentimental, emotional stuff. It's service, hard work for God. So we were working hard. Stern brows. Surrender Prabhu. Hey, stop spacing out. Do your work properly. We are servants of God. And there we were, caring for our services, but not always for each other. Breakfast, I hope I can hear myself. But then we learn Prabhupada explained it so nicely there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Although I can't find the text anymore. That Krishna is more than God. I've said this many times here, but I think it's very significant and important. But Krishna is God. And all of God's expansions, parts and parcels. In other words, all of us. So yes, loving Krishna means also loving everyone. Your friends, your kins, your family members, your spouse. And yes, the Vaishnava qualities that we can read about and sometimes just quickly reiterate during Bhagavatam classes, Gita classes. What are they describing? They are describing loving relationships. Aren't they? Surida Sarva Devanam, being a friend of everyone. Friendship is a rasa, it's a kind of loving relationship, right?
and so on. So these rasas, these relationships, they are at the center and core of what bhakti means, right? We have the nectar of devotion telling us that. And those rasas relationships are not only between us and God, but between us and Krishna, who includes all his expansions and parts of parts, in other words, all of us. Krishna, and when we see that all of us are rays from Krishna, rays from God, then we see Krishna everywhere. Simultaneous oneness and difference, right? But ultimately everything is God, everything is Krishna. With us as part and parcels. And that relationship, if we should get a bit philosophical, between us is what it's all about. It's what bhakti is about. Would anyone think that in our normal state, our self-realized state, or whatever you want to call it, we are there loving God with all our heart by serving, but not caring about everyone else? Even that word else makes no sense, really. Not caring about each other. In other words, seeing each other as separate from God, as, and of course, since here some of us are deeply in the modes of nature, selfish and so on, greedy, but some are not. So I would say cynicism can be a syndrome or a disease even that may affect people and be a natural consequence of being a materialist or of being a selfish person, but also one who thinks that this is the ultimate reality. Everyone thinks about himself. So, at least that's my understanding. That the relationships, the loving relationships between us are as real as our loving relationship with God is. Yes, here we are. Some of us selfish, greedy bastards. Bastards. But some of us looking for real love and starting to understand what it is. Is love simply and only about serving? Well, as we know, and we take that verse with Dasyan, Svartimatvaniridhan, what is that called? Service, serving like that is one way of expressing love. And therefore, this understanding of the rasas is so important. Because it really solves that love mystery. It helps us to understand it. And with understanding it, I mean not in the head, as some philosophical concept, but by living in such relationships in the right, happy, loving way. Yes, then the next problem comes. The relationships we have here in this earthly level, in this material world, are temporary. they do not last. Because this world is not the real world. It's like a dream or a game that we are all visiting. So when we think we are these bodies, we are in an illusion, which is called Maya. And which we know well. But we actually exist beyond this world. Now, so many people have reported and are reporting having near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, where they moved out of this, of their bodies, physical bodies, out of this world even, entering a different realm, beautiful realm, in most cases. They meet ancestors, just saw one man, a paramedic, who got infected by something and died. Went to another world where he had a very loving reunion with his deceased brother, and understood, hey, we're still here, still around, but you just can't see us. We're waiting for you. And all of these people who had that kind of experience, which most near-death experiences seem to have, when they came back, they said they had no fear of death anymore. Now the question is, did they have fear of relationships after that? It would be interesting to ask them. Because it seems to me that some would say that the Bhagavatam and these Shastras say something else, but I think I can argue for my sake here that the temporality of the relationships we have here, wife and children, sometimes they are mentioned in what may even sound like cynical terms there in these verses of the Bhagavatam, like the one Malia quoted. This Kulashekara, their frustrated king, failed, or whatever. You know, sometimes these are parts of stories. Because this knowledge here is written in the form of stories. Again, it's about relationships, it's about people going through things and how they handle it. And then you have this king there who may have had great love or have great love for his family members and so on. But having lost some family member or being afraid or worried about losing one, which we all feel, right? And then you might say things like that, oh, whoa. Just see how illusory and temporary those roles are. Like the role of that soul who is now acting as my wife or my child. One day I won't be the parent of that person anymore, and that person will not be my child anymore. But that doesn't mean that our relationships end there. That depends on our consciousness. In the old cultures, including the Indian one, of course, children maintained the relationship, upheld it to their deceased parents. This is the Shraddha sacrifice, the Pinda. You find it in all cultures. And here, as I said somewhere else, here in Scandinavia, I read a book about the old people here. Saying that the original people up here in Scandinavia, they didn't say that someone passed away or left them when they died. They didn't use the word die. They just moved over to the invisible world. Where they, and that's the thing, the understanding we get now from these near-death experiences and all of that, including the Bhagavatam and other that cosmologies, is that that other side, that other world, Bhuvarloka, Pitriloka, there, is first of all more real than this. But it's also close to this world. And mediums and other people can therefore, it's possible to contact. To have contact between those In other words, what I'm really getting at here is that if our relationships are merely on a bodily platform, a physical platform, then they will be frustrating and unhappy because we will lose them. They're not for real. But also, they may often break up for other reasons too, such as conflicts and whatever. Because we don't see each other the way we actually are. But between devotees, Vaishnavas, transcendentalists, who more and more learn to see themselves and each other not just as bodies but as the souls, and learn to know each other soul to soul, and learn to love each other soul to soul, then that relationship, soul to soul relationship, will of course not be broken by just a change of physical dress or body. Thus, I see no reason why people who actually love each other will not be reunited after leaving this world, this body. And that is exactly what we find. Witness testimonies from near-death experiences and so on. And of course, we read about life in Krishna Loka and Vaikuntha and so on, how devotees are there together with Krishna at the center. Who are those people who are there? They are us. We're all supposed to go back there, right? And if you are ultimately a coward boy, a member of Baladev's gang or something, and if I am so too, well, chances are that we will meet, right? If we like each other, especially if we maybe we made friends in some Sankirtan van here on earth. And yes, well, maybe when we return home, we will of course recognize that this person who I was sitting in the Sankirtan with is you there, this other coward boy, and we were just down there and trying to help the fallen conditioned souls for a while. In other words, the more we actually understand and realize and live this life of bhakti in these relationships, soul-to-soul relationships more and more, learning to know each other the way we actually are and becoming the way we actually are more and more, it's a gradual process. The more we will also lift up, rise up from this lower form of existence and experience of life in this relatively thick modes of nature that we find on earth and which are the cause of our suffering and our problems with relationships and all and so on. And our experience, our view, our level of being, the world we find ourselves in, it's much more real than this, which means our relationships there are much more real too. And as we go towards the actual point of, well, I'm now almost again getting into cosmology with the Bhagavatam, the point of Svetadvipa returning back to standing there on the shore of the ocean of milk, and there is Vishnu, and we are ready for stepping out of this dream world altogether and going back home. And there our loving relationships are completely the way they should be, and that we actually feel that they should be. Thus, love is not an illusion. It's our these physical material identities that are illusions. And then illusory love is when it rather turns into lust, which is not just about sexuality, it's about an exploitative, selfish, I want mentality. I want to get, you know, the selfishness, which again is, you could say, the false ego in a way, but it's really getting down into the mode of passion and ignorance. So it's about raising above those lower modes of nature, passion and ignorance. And the more we do so, the more real our love and our relationships become. And in my opinion, the going the other way, which some do, that you become colder, harder, turning away, losing faith in humans, going into hermit stage, whatever. Well, it may be because you're so absorbed in loving relationships in the world beyond this earthly realm that you don't care about it anymore. Or it may be that you are still more on that Buddhist Advaita Vedantist Mayavad impersonalist way, level, where it's all about simply avoiding the pain. But bhakti goes not only one step further, but all the way. Something like that.